Podcasts. Welcome to the Games Explained podcast, where we talk about board games and we talk about Ben's shed shelf. We're your hosts,
Dan,
Ben,
and Matt. How our podcast works is first we talk about games we've been playing, and then we talk about the topic of the day, which today is cards only board games. Ironic, I know. And then we talk about games we wish existed. So Ben, why don't you kick us off? Tell us about your shed. Tell us about your board games.
Well, I think for our listeners here, the board games are probably the most interesting part. So recently I've been playing a game called Tzulkin, I think is how it's pronounced. There's some apostrophes and Z's in there, so I think that's sort of right. It's a like Mayan Aztec sort of themed game, and it's got a really interesting board. Like the board is broken up into a few different sections, and right in the middle is this giant cog with a bunch of little cogs all around it. And each day in the game, each turn essentially, the cog in the center moves one position, and that in turn moves all the cogs on the outside. And this game has both literally and metaphorically a lot of moving pieces. And so it's kind of hard to explain verbally. It's probably not the best choice for a podcast. But to put it simply, there's a certain number of days until the, I guess, you know, since it's a mind game, maybe it's, you know, playing off the theme of the end of the world kind of thing, of X number of days until the end. And so there's this central wheel that is the passage of time. Each day it turns, and then all the individual wheels on the outside represent different aspects of your community. So you've got one that section that's forestry and farming. You've got another section that's a religion wheel. You've got another section that is like artifacts. You've got another section that is on like culture. And then you've got another area of the board where you've got different temples, and you can build up your group's level in the temple. You've got another section that is like progression through different, like almost skill tree kind of thing. Like there's a lot of stuff in this, and I've only played it like 3 or 4 times, and it's been really interesting. But every time there's an aspect of the game where I'm like, I didn't use this section at all.
Is that like a multi-hour game? How long is that one?
I'd say it's like an hour, hour and a half, something like that. It's not crazy, but it is something that is reasonably involved. So if you like the heavy strategy games, it's definitely something for you. If you prefer the party type games, I wouldn't recommend it for you. But I definitely have enjoyed it, and I wouldn't mind playing it a few more times. Yeah, and so how it works is each turn, you have to place your workers onto the board or recall your workers from the board and reap the benefit of them having been on the board. And when you place your worker, so you can't place and recall at the same time. So there's some strategy in the timing of when you put them out and where you put them. So when you put them out, you can put them out in the first open position on each gear, and then as each day progresses, your worker moves along the gear. And so the higher up in the gear they get to, the better the reward on that gear. So in the forestry and farming gear, the more wood or crops you get, the further along you get. If you're going to place your character in there and someone else is already placed there, then you have to pay some extra to get your person on that wheel as kind of a way to jump the queue. And then when you're recalling them, you have to make sure that you're recalling them all at the right time, not trying to place them at a time when you actually need to be recalling them and that kind of thing. And then you're also competing to see who goes first, because there's obviously a benefit to being the first one in the turn to place your workers. And so, yeah, lots of little moving pieces in this thing. And it's really interesting to try and balance all that and get everything you need to get done in the number of days allotted in the game. So, yeah.
I'm imagining that the game is very fun to look at.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Good thing we're in audio-only
medium.
Yeah, Tzulkin. It
spell it is... for us, and then they can the good people can look it up on their phone as they're driving around listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I'm
just kidding about that.
It's TZOLK'IN. If you leave out the apostrophe, you'll find the stuff to you. TZOLKIN.
Themed off the Mayan calendar.
Yeah.
Oh, it's exactly as you described.
Wow.
They're cogs and they all spin each other.
Yeah, and lots and lots of pieces and cards and yeah.
That's really cool. I like that. Well, hey, Google it for yourselves, folks. I played very recently a game by a publisher called Blue Orange, which you might be familiar with. They make such gems as King Domino, Photosynthesis, mm-hmm. Queen Domino, Battle Sheep. Now, I want you to, I'll explain this game in story form. Imagine that you are a Polynesian of old. You are sailing the ocean. All you can see is water all around. You're looking for an island to settle on. And then you find ten islands. And then you land on them and you find resources on them. Now, isn't that the most compelling story you've ever heard?
Can I open my eyes now?
Yes, open your eyes, everybody. The tapestry that I weaved with my words is now complete. So this game, there's a board and there's 10 different islands. And on those islands are specific places where resources spawn. The resources are randomized. There's like four different types. And then there's a fifth type, which is special, and they're called idols, and they're different from like the food type of resources and that kind of thing. And the game takes place in two phases. In the first phase, you are coming into the islands from the water, and you are placing your settlers in a hexagonal places for them along the island, and your job is to spread out and place these huts or these village tokens. And the village tokens are basically the same as a regular worker, except that there are two phases in the total of this game. In the second phase, you do not come in from water. Like in the first phase, you could just spawn on the water anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then everything needs to be connected. In the second phase, you can spawn from the huts that you made and not from the water. And so you want to make sure that you've placed your hut in a place where, like, the places that the resources spawn never change, but the type of resource that spawns there is randomized from the first round to the second round. And so you want to make sure that you're in good position. And so you can only move away from something that you own one space at a time. And so there's a lot of thinking ahead, four or five moves, like if Susie puts her piece here and Billy puts their piece here, can I make it to this piece in time, or should I abandon that and go this way? And there's multiple ways to score points. You can either go for all of the same kind of resource, or you can go for all different kinds of resources, or you can try and land a villager on all of the different islands, or you can have the most villagers on an island. And there's lots of different ways to play. And so like your brain is constantly working to try and think, parse out multiple moves in advance, what is the best option to do. And it is tons of fun. Like, it seems very simple in some ways, but your brain really spins when you're playing it, and you really are thinking like five moves ahead, like trying to get in the mind of Susie and Billy as they play their pieces. Yeah.
Is there any randomness in the game?
The randomness is in where the resources end up. So there are like 20 different resource spawn tile sections, but it could be corn there, it could be an idol there, it could be water there. And there's nothing particularly special about any of them except for idols. They score differently than the other things, but the combinations are what matter. So there's just enough variation to keep you on your toes.
Nice.
Cool.
Groovy. Blue Lagoon. Before I say what game I've been playing, we're going to play a game. It's called Use That Word in a Sentence. The word is spelled H-E-R-B. Daniel, you're first.
I need to go to the garden in the back so that I can collect the herb that I need, singular, for supper.
Okay, Ben.
I do not have an uncle named Herb.
So I notice neither of you used the very soft herb pronunciation with a
herb
with
is how I would H. pronounce the plant. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, no, I didn't say what it was. I just said it's a word.
Tomato, tomato.
That's how that saying goes. Yeah.
Tomato. Well, this game is called Herbaceous, or Herbaceous, or
depending.
Herbaceous. to use it in a sentence, this game was very herbaceous. This game is small and light and strategic. All you do on your turn is you pick up a card. It's an herb. You either plant it in the community garden, which everyone can use, or you plant it in your private garden, which everyone can see, but only you can use. And the other thing you do on your turn, which actually happens first, is you can plant things that are in your garden or the community garden. That's it. What makes it interesting is you have four different pots that you can plant in. And when you decide, I'm going to plant in this pot, you get one shot. So you have to wait until there's enough stuff in your garden and the community garden to make it worthwhile to fill that pot. Because once you've planted it, you can't use that pot again. And there's only four. And the pots are unique. So one pot, everything has to be a unique herb. One pot, it all has to be the same herb. One, it has to be in pairs of herbs. And another one is for like special cards or one-off cards. And so it's a game of balancing when you're going to pull that trigger with your opponents, because you're all sharing that community garden. So if you see that there's like a couple pairs in that community garden, and you know your pot maxes out at six pairs, or five pairs or whatever, you might want to pull the trigger at three pairs, because your buddy's going to get four pairs. So you might as well just do it now, because that's the best you're going to get. And so it's this like you're going around and taking turns and being like, well, who's going to do it? And are you going to pull the pairs? I'm looking at your private garden, and you have a lot of this herb, so maybe you're going to pull the trigger on that one. And so it's this kind of like game of chicken gardening game.
Interesting.
So you find out who's the risk takers in the group and who's risk averse very quickly. People will like grab stuff right at the beginning.
Yeah. So in my first time playing it, I pulled the trigger really fast. I was like, this pot's full. That, or not full even, but like, I'm gonna use up that one, I'm gonna use up this one. Two special cards, it can hold three, but two's good enough. And then I won. Because I just didn't wait. But if you did that too soon, or if two people are trying to do that, you won't be successful.
Right. Like, you sort of have to feel out the mindset of the other people at the table.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Yeah.
What kind of pieces do you use to play that game?
This game is exclusively cards. There is one exception, which is these decorative dividers that divide your private garden from the public garden, but they serve like not enough purpose that I would say that they're a requirement for the game. And so I would call this game a cards-only game.
Interesting.
Cards-only game? Ding, 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 what? Ding, ding. That's the word of the day, or phrase, noun clause. That's the theme of the day. Topic. Yeah. Thanks, Ben, for the reasonable
That's
answer.
The one. Nice. Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting that you say cards-only, because you say that that one had a few little pieces in it. So what are we going to define as we talk about card only games?
All right, let's
what are the parameters here?
Let's lay some ground rules. Things that are allowed: purely decorative things, or things that are like, it's just which I would call those dividers. It's purely decorative. You whatever.
You could play without them. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Or tools for adding the score at the end of the game. So if the game is like, just cards, but there's like a pencil and a little tally sheet.
Or like cribbage.
Ooh.
Which has a giant board on it.
It's but... funny because you don't need the board to play cribbage. Yep. Like,
yeah, it's just tracking scores. It's... You could have a pencil and paper. But, you, well, but to play it properly, you need the board.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording that like it's kind of shocking with these restrictions of like a game that, that doesn't require anything else being the parameters for this card on the game and how many games still fit in that. Any games like cribbage where you're typically have a board like what am I trying to say? So we say that the system to keep score maybe is still allowed for a card only game, but if your game is so complicated that it requires something in order to keep score instead of keeping score internally, is that still a card only game then?
Ooh.
I would qualify it as not for keeping score, but for tallying the score at the end. So you use a calculator.
Yeah. So in that case, cribbage would not be allowed because you're keeping score throughout.
Yes. So things that are disallowed, timekeepers. Sorry, Mad Gab, you have a timekeeper. Pencils used during play. Point trackers or currency tokens.
That would be cribbage, a point tracker.
Cribbage or love letter, where it's basically cards, but you have those cubes of affection. Those cubes disqualify it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so that type of thing disqualifies in our terms as a card-only game.
Yep.
But if it's only for final score tallies or for decoration, then it's allowed to be a card-only game.
Yeah.
Okay, let's great.
That. Yep.
Great. All right, well... I personally can think of countless examples of this.
I know, right? Like, so for me, I really got, you know, into board games, you know, with this like recent kind of revival of board games when I started playing Dominion a number of years ago, around the time it came out. I just really liked the amount of strategy that could go into it and the fact that you can, you know, do the deck building thing and build up your little engine of generating points. And you kind of don't really know how the game is going to play out. You got an idea based on what other people are doing, but you really don't know until the very end when you're counting up all your score, which is part of your deck. And that's definitely the game that stands out to me as like staple in the modern card-based genre.
Mm-hmm. I think Dominion is one of the biggest games I can think of that would fit this category. Because you lay the game out and it's grand. Like there's like 12 different categories and a bunch of currencies and a bunch of victory point things and they're all just cards and they go in your hand,
at least in the base set. Cards. Yeah.
Yeah. That is something. And I will say, as we talk about this subject, there's an unfortunate number of games that are, and not just card only games, but other games too, where really the game could be contained in like the size of a pack of card sleeves, but they have all this extra packaging and it takes up a bunch of space on my shelf. And I'm like, why do you do this to me?
It's marketing, right? Like you can't charge $25 for something that looks like
for Uno, it
would come free in a bubblegum wrapper.
Right. And what the other thing that shocked me is, as I was thinking about these games, is the amount of games where you could basically just take a standard deck of cards and like relabel the cards and it would be this other game. So like an example of that would be Wizard, where I have some friends who did this and gave us the idea. They bought two packs of bicycle playing cards, so 52 card decks, but each deck had two jokers and two like company logo cards on them. So you just combine the two decks, you take the two jokers and the two company logo cards from this deck and you put them in here. The thing that makes Wizard different from a standard deck is that there are four jokers, which are basically like I lose no matter what, and four wizards, which are I win no matter what. And then otherwise it's basically just three suits of 13 cards, or sorry, four suits of 13 cards, which is standard. So you just mash that together and you have a $2 game of Wizard instead of, you know, whatever it actually costs. But I mean, somebody had to think of the game Wizard, so they deserve some money for that. But
right.
Well, but Rook, we didn't. Rook is also an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my Mennonite heritage, there was a time where using playing cards was verboten.
Right.
Like, that was not allowed, because it's like if you're using a standard deck of playing cards, you're obviously gambling, and gambling is not allowed. But you could play Rook because they look slightly different.
Yeah. It's colors. You're not using the devil's tickets, so you get to play.
Yeah.
The devil's ticket.
It's red, yellow, black, and blue. It's not hearts, spades, and all these other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That is another one where, like, you know, those games that are suits and trumps kinds of games that use something slightly different from a standard deck of cards, you could probably find a way to make it work with a deck of cards. But there are, of course, many examples of things that don't do it that way. And one big example to me is Bonanza, which is a phenomenal game where you have all these systems. And that's one thing I think that features into a lot of these card games, too. You mentioned Dominion, and with Bonanza, too, like, there are implied places that, like, if you had a board, it would be like, this is my action area, this is my draw pile, this is my discard, and there'd be like a spot on the board for that. But it's the rules say, like, this area, this imagined area in front of you is for when you play your actions, this imagined area is for spent cards and whatever else. And the same thing in Bonanza, right? Like, in that game, there's the deck, there's the discard pile, there's each person's individual fields, and within, or farm, I guess, and within those farms you have two fields, and you can buy a third one, and that's represented by a card that you take from the side. And then there's also this area in the middle of unclaimed beans, where, because on your turn you have to flip over a certain number of cards and they have to get distributed to people. And so there's multiple playing areas without anything concrete telling you this is this. Mm-hmm. But to keep the game simple in terms of components, all you need is this deck of however many cards there are to play that game.
Yeah. Well, and I think Bonanza is particularly interesting because of that, you know, that third bean field has a token that indicates that you've purchased it, but that token is just another playing card. And then when you are earning points from the beans you plant in your field, they are just the backs of the other cards that have a coin on them. And so you're reusing the cards that you play with as your point trackers, essentially, and that pulls them out of circulation, which actually affects the game too. And it's really interesting how they played all that intricacy of tokens but into the card only game.
Yeah, like, there's multiple functionality to the card. On this side it's a bean, on this side it's currency. That's cool.
Another game that does that well is Point Salad, where one side of the card is a vegetable, which you can use to satisfy rules and get points. And the back side is those rules. And there's a rule where if it's a rules side up, you have an opportunity to flip it to its vegetable side and do that conversion live. So that's another clever use of both sides of the card. It's not meant to look like a uniform deck until you flip it over.
Right. And then there's a game like Boss Monster where there's like five or six different kinds of cards that play different roles. Like, you have room cards whose purpose is to build the structure that the lore of the game is about. And then you have your boss card, which is at the end of your dungeon. It's still a card, but it's representing a character. And then you have all these hero cards, which represent other characters, the bad people who are trying to invade your dungeon. You have, in the expansions, there's items, there's spells that you can play. So there's a bunch of different kinds of cards that serve different purposes and don't necessarily get mixed together when you're shuffling or organizing the game. But yeah, they do serve very distinct purposes and don't get mushed together like in Bonanza or Point Salad.
Another genre of games that is cards only would be, I'm going to call it the apples to apples genre. My favorite of which is Snake Oil. Let me tell you about Snake Oil and my house rules. So Snake Oil is a game where one person's the judge, like apples to apples, and everybody else has something to give them. But those other people are given just a handful of nouns, and they have to take two of those nouns, and that becomes a product name. So it could be water monitor, and you have to pitch that as if it's a real thing. So does that mean it's something that monitors water? Is it like a TV monitor that's built with water? Is it like, what you have to figure out what that means and then pitch that to the judge, who has a character. So it's like a teacher or a kindergartner or something like that. And the house rule I play with is you only get two cards. So you don't have a handful to like make a perfect thing. You just have two, and you can choose if it's AB or BA, and that's all you get. And I love it because it brings out so much creativity. Like, you have to work so hard to make it fit something that that person could want. And you have to be so creative that I think it just brings out the best, especially because everyone knows that everyone else is under that extreme restriction as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just full of laughs. Snake Oil. I love it.
I didn't know that there were... Okay, so you're saying that you take on the role of a person that is being pitched to when you play that game?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different types of cards, which are characters, I guess. Not full, like, flushed out characters, but it literally says kindergartner. And also how I like to play is you like, try to do a voice of the character if you want.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And if you're selling your snake oil, you can be like, "Hey, buddy, don't you feel how I feel? Every day, you're blah, 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 blah."
You gotta have that transatlantic accent for that stuff. Snake oil. The world's greatest remedy for the water monitoring. Honestly, one of the best things about these card-only games is that when they are packaged in a way that makes it compact, you can just throw like a dozen games in your bag and just bike over to a friend's house or whatever. It's not like you're taking the kitchen sink with you. You have a ton of different games, a ton of variety to play, and a lot of these are very creative and very robust, as we've talked about. Like, it's not just shuffling and dealing cards all the time. It's like there's an economy in it with Dominion. There's different creative ways to make cards do different things other than just having a hand and playing your hand and whatever. So that is something that I really appreciate about card-only games.
Mm-hmm. And that's to where the games that are just a re-theming of your classic 52-card deck. That means that you can be, you know, a backpack traveler across the world and just keep a deck of cards in your backpack and be able to play a bunch of games with a bunch of people all over the place and still get a bunch of variety and entertainment out of a simple, small package.
Yeah.
So those are some card games that do exist. Where do we think they could go? What do we wish would exist? Let's dream.
I want a card game where we talked about the multiple functions of cards in Bonanza and Point Salad, where you can flip them over and it's something different. I think it'd be cool to explore that even more and see, like, if I play a card in this orientation, it means this thing. Or if I play a card in this orientation, it means this thing. Or I'm sort of thinking now a little bit about Magic the Gathering, which you could say is another cards only game. I was just gonna say
trading card games are a whole another thing. Yeah, but
yeah, exactly. And there's some wacky things that Magic the Gathering does. Like they have cards that you could play it with like this side facing up and it does this thing, or you could rotate the card 180 degrees and play it this way and it has a different effect. Or you have cards like four cards that make up this giant card, like a Power Rangers suit that all combine together to make like a giant thing that you play, and you can't play it unless you have all the pieces that go with it. And then there's wacky stuff like the not tournament legal cards where you like take a card and you rip it up into little pieces and you blow it onto the battlefield, and all the pieces that it lands on are destroyed or something.
That's
like
so
that.
Great.
So good.
Like I want the wackiest possible imaginings for the use of cards and to have a game based on that. Of course, a game where you rip up your cards won't last you very long. something maybe more sustainable.
Well, something that you don't mind being a limited use, like there's 1,000 blank white cards where you literally have blank cards. You can write whatever you want on it. That could be something about ripping them up. That could be something about, like, build a card tower out of these cards and then play Jenga with them. And then whichever cards fall over are the ones you have to play the next round with or something. Like, you could do some crazy stuff that way and not care about how things turn out.
Yeah, I think there's lots of like design space for the physical use of cards. Like, you can have cards where you lay them over top of each other and which part of it is revealed means something else.
Yeah.
In Saboteur, the cards where they physically go line up paths that your character figuratively walks down.
Mm-hmm. What was a game, Matt, the other week you mentioned where you put tiles on top of each other and if you can see through to the thing underneath that does something?
Ship Shape.
Yeah, there you go. You could have like a card version of that where, like, I don't know, there's text on a card or something and there's some holes cut in a card and then you stick it on top of each other and it like tells you a message or changes the meaning of the text on a card or something like that.
But I forget what.
Or let's change the shape of cards. Like, why don't we have Penrose tile shaped cards? Let's get wild.
What?
Penrose tiling. Look it up. It's aperiodic as
well. And there's also card games that come printed on like transparent plastic material, and so you actually can layer them on top of each other, but they still have the traditional card form factor. And so, you know, the front and back might actually literally be the front and back of a person, or the front might be them in one facial expression and the back might be them in some other expression with, you know, different accessories that do something. Or you, like, you have to line, what card game is it? Is it Builder's Antiquity where it does that?
Yes. So you have to, there's little notches that show like how skilled your builders are in different categories. And then you have the buildings. So yeah, and in that game too, the building cards are like square in shape, and the builders are the same shape as a regular playing card, but it's the same height as these square sized buildings that you construct, and you tuck in your builders behind it, and then the amount of resources required to build the building line up with the amount of resources that your builder is bringing to the task in that area. And so you might need two or three or four or more builders to build something. And you just, as you tuck in those builders, the only piece of information that is important to you is the only piece of information that you can see, which is how many notches they can provide in that category to the task at hand.
Nice. Could there be a dexterity game that's a cards only game?
If you make the cards out of titanium, maybe.
I think Jana had a dream where I came up with a dexterity cards only game where you had to flick cards in a certain way and like land them on other cards. Yeah. So not quite real, but
there's always 52 pickup.
Well, yeah. Oh man. That reminds me of something which is pretty much 52 pickup, where I was playing cards with somebody. We had a whole evening to kill, and they're like, hey, you want to play the pigs and the farmers? I'll be the pig. I'm like, great, I'll be the farmer. And they're like, the pig makes the mess. And they like took the deck of cards and threw it in the air, and the farmer cleans it up. It's like, oh my gosh, you're the worst.
Well, that's all for the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Come back next time when we talk about that feeling that you left your oven on. Did you?
Oh gosh, did I?
Turn your car around right now.
Gotcha. Also, you're blinking. Also, you're breathing.
No.
What? How did you know? Are you a magician?
Oh, man. Games. Love games. See ya.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for stopping by. You can see the rest of our content at youtube.com/gamesexplained, where we have rules videos, editorials, and these podcasts. See you next time.